I think value is critical. You know, you have to get the value of the players right.
Chan outside they go. Good catch by Jones. Better move, the dive, and a Detroit touchdown. Marvin Jones.
And the key word there was value. That isn't always the most expensive player.
And he can throw. He's left-handed. Looking. But the defense does its job, and he gets taken down at the 31-yard line by Malcolm Brown.
You're just like building a stock portfolio.
First down, and an interception. Shaquille Griffin.
If you get a bunch of overpriced stocks, you buy high and sell low, eventually that catches up with you.
I see the vision that Coach Meyer is trying to build here.
And now throwing deep, and he's picked off at the 45-yard line. Rayshon Jenkins on his way back.
You know, Coach Maya wins. Everything's there. The track record is there. Why not Jacksonville?
I can only imagine, you know, coming from where we was last year to one of the most winningest teams going into next season, I want to be a part of that. We talk about this time next year going into the season, and we had that same discussion. Like, man, you said we was going to do it. I want to have those type of talks. I want to be part of that history. So that's the part that I'm believing in, that I'm excited for. So, yeah, it was no sell pitch. I seen it coming myself. I seen everything kind of unfolding. I just wanted to be a part of it.
You listen to Jaguars Today with Tony Smith and E.T. Come on, somebody.
Yes, you are here on a Thursday. You can smell football season in the air, can't you? The heat getting cranked up. The Jaguars announced training camp practices that will be open to the public yesterday. We'll go through a little bit of that today as they announce all the dates for training camp. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't excited to see that scrimmage back on the schedule so the fans get an opportunity to go out and see everything going on with this team, including your first opportunity to see Trevor Lawrence playing in that particular stadium here in a couple weeks during Jaguars training camp. So we'll talk about that today. E.T. alongside Mike Dempsey, still doing the vacay thing. He'll be back with us on Monday. We got a lot to get into on the program today, and I do believe the little man's here for the show today as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he back there on he playing Roblox or something. He was asking me about some Robux or something, man. I was trying to, I don't know, man. Man, I don't know.
They're always ahead of us.
Man, he worked that thing better than I can.
Yeah, they're always ahead of us. That's just the way it works. I can remember watching my parents kind of finger peck their way through, you know, when I was going through school and we had, you know, computer classes and all that kind of stuff. Like that kind of, it's just, they're always one step ahead, that next generation with the technology.
Yeah, they are, man. He teaches me all the new stuff, man. He know way more about football than I thought he did, man.
Oh?
Yeah, man. Hey, boy, who's your favorite player again? Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson.
Trevor Lawrence.
We'll have to fix that.
We're going to fix that.
As Aiden in the house out for today's program as well. As I said, we got a bunch to get into. Hayes Carline going to join me here in about 30 minutes. We'll get his reaction as we are just, 5 days away from the veterans reporting for training camp here in Jacksonville now at this point. Also going to take a look around the AFC South a little bit later on in the show. In the 11 o'clock hour, at the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with each of the stops in the AFC South. Jim Wyatt of Titans Online will join us to talk about the Titans. Derek Schultz with the Indianapolis Star will join us to talk about the Colts. And John Harris, who is the sideline reporter for the Texans, to check in on the dumpster fire that is the Houston Texans heading into the 2021 season at this point. I saw CBS finally put up I've been talking about it the last couple of days. They've been doing a deal where they're trying to write out the top three questions for each team heading into their training camp, right? And they finally got around to the AFC South with that deal today. And I want to find, let me go look and see who wrote this one again today. Jeff Kerr wrote the article, and I'm not sure if he's been writing all of them. I'll have to go look at some of the others that have been written, but he definitely wrote it for the AFC South, and they put it up on the website today on CBSSports.com, and I want to find Jeff Kerr and hug his neck. Honestly, I do. I just want to find him, and I want to give him a big old hug because I don't know what I would have put the odds at, but I would have put him pretty high that if you were going to list three questions for the Jaguars going into training camp, that Tim Tebow would be one of them? Like, I just thought for sure if a national guy is going to have to talk about the three questions for the Jaguars going into training camp, that one of those three would be a question about Tim Tebow and whether or not he can play tight end. It's not.
That's kind of surprising.
Yeah. Like I said, I want to hug the guy. I just want to find him and say thank you. Thank you for some rationality with this, that you didn't write an article about the last guy they added to the roster and whether or not he can play tight end. I heard discussion about it on nationally just on my way in this morning where the Jaguars got brought up, and it was like, I think Tebow may cut out the legs from underneath Trevor Lawrence at some point this year. It was essentially what they said, and I was like, my gosh. Like, if we're to a point where the national guys can't even talk intelligently about the quarterbacks in the NFL, what have we done? Like, what have we become? If we're getting to that point with the way that we're talking about it. But that was not one of the three questions that they pointed out for the Jaguars. We'll discuss what questions they did put up there as we go throughout the show today. Our question of the day today, as I mentioned, I might use for the question yesterday, who is the most important player in the Jaguars secondary for the 2021 season? I screwed it up, because I added a name I probably shouldn't have, and I knew when I was doing it that I probably should have just put it at two and then leave, you know, the third space for other.
Should have went 1v1.
Yeah, ultimately, but I put Shaq Griffin, C.J. Henderson, who I figured would be pretty close between the two of them, and I included Rayshon Jenkins, who's getting some votes, but not many, and then other being the fourth option on the poll this morning, but as expected, at least early on here, Shaq Griffin and C.J. Henderson basically splitting about 90% of the vote between the two of those guys. We'll get to some of y'all's responses to that a little bit later on the show, give our answers as well. I want to talk about the Fred Warner contract and what that could mean going into the future for a guy that we haven't talked about his contract in a while, but Miles Jack
wasn't down
and got a new deal when he was 23 years old. And it raised a bunch of eyebrows even here in Jacksonville. Like, they're going to pay him what? He's a man without a position. At the time that they signed him to the deal that they signed him to, he's still among the five highest paid, not outside rush linebackers in the league. Like, it's hard to even quantify exactly what he is. They paid him as a middle linebacker. He's playing middle linebacker here in the 3-4, but it's more like he's being asked to do a bunch of stuff that he would be asked to do as the weak side guy. In a 3-4 anyway. So, but they finally found the position that Miles should be playing, and he is excelling. What could that mean going into the future as we see Fred Warner get that big deal? One expected to be coming down the pike for Darius Leonard to follow that deal for Fred Warner. So we'll discuss that. And again, take a look at the training camp schedule. When can you go see your Jacksonville Jaguars, and when will it be closed to the public? When do they put the pads on for this Jaguars team too, and let you know as fans out there what days you can go check them out once they get those pads put on. But we'll talk about all of that and more as we go through the show today. Again, Hayes Carline joining me in about half an hour. We'll talk about Miles Jack on the other side when we return, and what is his potential future here in Jacksonville from a contract situation. We talk about DJ Chark and trying to get an extension done a lot. What does the Fred Warner deal mean for Miles Jack potentially? Maybe not immediately, but sometime in the future. We'll discuss that when we return. ET alongside, I'm Tony Smith. It's a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today, and you're listening to 1010 XL.
Play fake. Throwing toward the end zone, that ball is going to be... I think it was picked off by Miles Jack. No signal yet. What a play by Miles if that's an interception. But I think Miles picked it off. Yes, he did. What a play by Miles Jack. An interception in the corner of the end zone.
Interception for a touchback.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Oh, everybody knows. If you've been listening, I'm a Miles Jack stan. I have been for a while. Been a Miles Jack fan since he was coming up in the draft, and want to talk about his contract and where we could be looking at it here going into next offseason. Obviously, this year the work has already been done, hay's in the barn, as they say, for the 2021 season. But what does it look like for Miles Jack going into the future? We'll discuss that. The Jaguars yesterday announced the training camp schedule for the team this year, including six practices that are going to be open to the public. And Mike and I are hopeful to be out at each of those practices that are open on weekdays, obviously when our show would typically be on with the time of the practices at the usual time that they have been in years past, scheduled for 9:45 in the morning until 11:45, and so close to noon, that would be right around when we're on, E. So we're hopeful and excited about the opportunity to get back out there and cover training camp then in that fashion. Again, for fans who maybe haven't heard yet, the Jaguars start training camp on the field. They report for training camp next week on Tuesday. All the veterans have to report to the team. And then on Wednesday, they're on the field for the first time, still just in helmets, but on the field, Wednesday, July 28th, the Jaguars will have a training camp practice. That's
football is among us.
It is 6 days away, E, from the Jaguars being on the field for training camp. And a week from today, next Thursday and Friday, fans can head out. Thursday is open to the general public. Friday, open only to season ticket holders for the Jaguars for a practice next Friday. And then Saturday, the practice is open to the public again. They'll take Sunday off, then be back at it. If you want to see the Jaguars in pads, the first opportunities for fans to see the Jags in pads will be on Friday, August 6th for training camp practice. If you want to head out for that, and then Saturday, they'll be in pads again. Then Sunday on August 8th is the scrimmage down at TIAA Bank Field. So, yeah, man, it's crazy. We're 2 weeks away from the scrimmage. You know, we're 3 weeks away, essentially, from the first preseason game against Cleveland, and that'll be here in town. But if you want to see them in pads for the first time, that's open and available to the public. That'll be Friday, August 6th. So if you're trying to make your plans for how to go out, they'll have a process that you have to go through to get into camp with everything that we've had going on with COVID and the restrictions that are still in place with that kind of thing. But they will be open to the public. Friday, August 6th is the first day open to the public with pads. Saturday, August 7th, also open with pads. And then the scrimmage on Sunday, August 8th, down at TIAA Bank Field. And that will be your first opportunity to watch Trevor Lawrence run around and throw a football on that field. Will be that day. And then we have no idea what the plan's going to be as far as how much playing time any of these guys will be getting when we get into the preseason. But I'm pretty sure he'll take a few snaps at that scrimmage that night. I don't know what it'll look like by the time Cleveland is here in town for week one of the preseason, but I'm pretty sure Trevor will be taking a few snaps Sunday, August 8th, down in the stadium if you want to make your plans to get out there. And again, the first practice open to the public 1 week from today, the second training camp practice for the Jags, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday next week will be open to the public if you want to try to come out and see your guys. Usually you've had an opportunity by this point to get out. You know, something has been open to the public, whether it be limited OTAs have been open to the public, or one or two or all of the mini camp practices can be open to the public. But this year, no. The only people that have seen these guys are obviously the coaches and the players and the limited media that they've been allowing to go in and watch these practices when they've been open to the media, which I think was five or six sessions over the course of the entire offseason. So for basically the entire world, this is new. It's going to be your first opportunity to see all of these guys.
Ooh,
all
I'm
the
out
additions.
There too. Ooh, I'm out there.
I bet you are.
Ooh, I can't wait.
We're a week away from practice open to the general public. I mentioned Miles Jack and what's going on with Fred Warner getting his big deal. Yesterday was announced that he got the 5-year extension with San Francisco, and he is a guy that is coming off an all-pro season, a Pro Bowl season as an inside linebacker with the 49ers, and he's getting that big, big, big money, $18, $19 million a year. Miles Jack signed his contract extension with the Jaguars with everything that we can point to and complain about with Dave Caldwell and the moves that he got wrong and the draft decisions that went south and things not working out and the disaster that was 2018 to 2020 and that they all survived most of that time. We can talk about all the things that went wrong. He got it right with Miles, and he got it right with signing him when he did, and for the Jaguars to have him under the control that they have had him under for the last several years, as Miles Jack looks like he's finally being asked to play the position he should be asked to play, and he's excelling at doing it on top of that. So I was thinking about this morning with Warner and Darius Leonard getting Leonard will get his deal. It sounds like it could even get done before they get into training camp next week up in Indianapolis, but he's going to get his deal. We know Fred Warner already got his deal. What does that mean for Miles Jack? I don't think it means anything this year, but I think as early as next offseason, we could at least start hearing rumblings about the potential for Miles to want to get something else worked out in his deal. And I just wanted to put it out in the ether before it becomes a big deal next offseason that that is something that I think could potentially be happening in the future. I'm not saying that I know anything about Miles Jack that makes me think he's going to do anything to push this kind of issue, but you look at it with Warner and Leonard jumping ahead of him, he'll still be 27 years old next year. Now, he'll have 2 years left on his deal with the Jaguars when we're going into next offseason, but he'll be 27 years old. He'll have a base salary of $10.5 million, $11.25 million in 2023. That's obviously not chump change, but I wouldn't even be surprised if the Jaguars at some point in that time, not that they definitely will, but at some point in that time would look at it and say, maybe it's better for us to move the money around a little bit, extend this guy so that we have him for his entire prime. He is set to be a free agent again in the offseason of 2024, which would be the year that he's turning 29. So you may want to think about trying to get two more years maybe out of Miles, depending on how this year plays out. Again, you have this year to watch it play out a little bit with Miles, but it's at least something that I think may be in the discussion when we get into next offseason.
It's time to get this money,
They better start thinking about it now.
Oh, he's got his money, and he'll continue to get his money. And Miles Jack right now is the... They still have him listed as the fourth highest paid inside linebacker on SpotTrack. That number will go down, obviously, with Fred Warner. When they officially announce that deal, he'll move ahead of him. And you look at the contracts that are ahead of him, right? C.J. Mosley, who's just been dealing with injuries basically since he signed that deal with the Jets. Like, I'm sure they would pull that right now if they could, but they can't, right? They just haven't gotten value for that contract. Jalen Smith signed a six-year, $68.5 million deal, essentially, in the offseason of 2019, the same time that Miles Jack did. And I've heard some people discussing how Jalen fits into getting him on the field this year for Dallas, right? And that's after they signed him to that deal. That doesn't mean he won't play this year, but he had a really down 2020. So what does it look like for him for 2021 and beyond? Zach Cunningham in Houston is a tackle machine. And I wouldn't be surprised if they wouldn't mind trading him at this point because they just got nothing going on, you know? And he's one of the few actual assets of any kind of value they have. But he's the third linebacker on this list right now with a four-year, $58 million deal. $1 million more than Miles Jack, and he signed the deal a year later than Miles Jack did. But he signed it at 25. Miles, they got that deal done when Miles was 23 years old.
Hey, I feel like it was just, oh, man.
When he was 23 years old. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a bargain to this point. It continues to be. And looking at this kind of list also reminds you of just how much is invested in linebacker, inside linebacker in Jacksonville. Joe Schobert has the seventh biggest contract among inside linebackers in the league. So you got the fourth and the seventh, and that's about to be the fifth and the eighth or the sixth and the ninth. You know, but that's still two of the top 10 paid inside linebackers in football are here in Jacksonville. You can feel however the heck you want to feel about Joe Schobert. I think I have a pretty good idea of how you feel about Miles Jack with the way that we talk about him as a player all the time. Let's get out to the phone lines for the first time today before we welcome in Hayes Carline on the other side of this break. And Byron down in Gainesville has a question for us at 641-1010. What's going on, Byron?
Hey, good morning, guys. Let me get this off my chest first. Duva!
Say it, brother.
Sorry,
yeah.
Guys. Hey, guys. You know, I'm not trying to be a jinx or nothing, but just watching sports over the last year, you never can go at one player. You got to have a backup. So my question is, who will be our backup quarterback? And hopefully we can rely on him if something, the worst happens. And secondly, guys, you know, the playoff run we made was the most exciting time for me, you know, being a Jags fan. But the inaugural year, I still got my Coke bottles and all my little shirts and stuff. I was so fired up. And it feels like that same vibe and buzz. So just you guys' opinion, I'm ready to go to practice and watch it, you know, which I hadn't done in years. But do you feel that same, you know, optimism and, you know, opinion about the Jags? Just a regular year, and I'm just all fired up myself. Duval, have a good one, guys.
Appreciate it, Byron. And, yeah, look, we talked about it when everything was about to change. Just with them bringing in Urban Meyer, all the opportunities with the cap space, knowing they had the number one overall pick, and that pick was going to be Trevor Lawrence, and having known that since the moment that Frank Gore got that first down. Like, it's having had all of that energy put into this. Yeah, it does feel like, look, nothing to this point can top the city actually getting a franchise, right? Like, we wouldn't even be having this discussion if we didn't have 93 and then leading into 95, right? Like, it's, that's the pinnacle, you know, to this point. But there is at least a feeling that instead of talking about 1 year, and Byron mentioned 2017, instead of talking about, remember that year where we spiked and won a couple playoff games, that we can talk about a run, like a legit run. And it feels like that could be in the future for the Jags, in the near future for the Jags, that we're talking about a sustained run of some level of success where they're competing for the playoffs, in the playoffs year after year, like they were 96, 97, 98, 99, two AFC championship games in that run as well. But they were a playoff team every year in that run, and they haven't had anything like that other than that four-year run in franchise history. And I'd be curious, and maybe it's something we'll ask as a poll question at some point, because I think it does speak to the age of the fans that we're talking to as well. Like, who is your favorite team in Jaguars history? Like, what Jaguars team do you have the fondest or strongest memories of?
That's
right?
A good question right there.
Because, you know, I think for older fans, it may be like 96 was magic.
96, yeah.
It was magic. And we've talked about it over and over and over again. 99 is the best team they've ever had. It's the best team in franchise history, was what they put together in 1999, going 14-2. And getting to the AFC championship game to play it in your home stadium. Like, they had earned that year. 2017 would be up there because I think for the young bucks, man, like, that's what they got.
And it was magical, though. 2017 was magical.
Yeah, and I guess we could throw in, you know, 05, 07, one of those, you know, that Del Rio era. You know, because I think there is a portion of the fan base that's the team that they attach themselves to, you know, and I totally get that. But I'd be curious, just because it would almost be me asking the demographics of the fan base, you know, at this point, like, how young have they skewed and how much of a lost generation have we had in the fan base as well here in Jacksonville, just because of a lack of success of any type. Here in the city. Hopefully that's going to change in the very, very near future. Again, they're on the field in 6 days for training camp out there for the Jaguars. We'll check in with Hayes Carline on the other side, our beat reporter here for 1010XL, and get his expectations for the opening of training camp when we return here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Can't touch this. Can't touch this.
Everything you need to know about the Jags. Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Can't touch this.
All right, as we say hello to our 1010XL Jaguars beat reporter, Hayes Carline, on the line right now. Hayes, how was the trip to Hoover, Alabama?
Yeah, Tony, it was great. Thanks for asking. We had a wonderful time, got a lot of great interviews with players and coaches, and got back last night around 2 a.m. to 1010XL, and so we're piecing it together this morning.
Okay, so we left you exactly like 8.5 hours of sleep before we called you to come in.
Which was ample.
Yeah, which I hope was enough. We just had a caller, Byron, and I forgot to answer his first question. This happens from time to time. I get caught up. And so I'll just ask you, Hayes. Byron wanted to know, what are the Jaguars going to be doing at backup quarterback heading into the season? What do you think it'll look like?
I think it's Gardner Minshew. I think at this point he's impressed the coaches with, you know, how he goes about his business and his intelligence. And I certainly didn't see a whole lot out of C.J. Beathard in OTAs, at least, to suggest that, you know, that he's a better option. So Gardner Minshew's incredibly cheap. You know, I would assume that he's, you know, reckoned with the, you know, with the way the situation is, which I don't think the Jaguars want to trade him. So there's not a whole lot he can do. So I think it'll be Trevor 1 and Gardner Minshew 2, unless there's a, you know, an injury in camp with one of the other 31 clubs. And, you know, if that's the case, then I think Gardner Minshew becomes a intriguing trade piece. But, you know, sure that, I think it's going to be Trevor Lawrence and Gardner Minshew, which is a surprise. I thought earlier in this offseason Minshew would have been moved. But I think the more that Urban and Schottenheimer and Bevel have been around him, the more they've liked him.
So how much of it is it a lock that they keep all three of those guys on the 53?
I hope they don't. I just think that's unnecessary in today's NFL to keep three quarterbacks on your active roster. I'd rather it be two, you know, and you just hope you don't have to deal with the emergency scenario of needing to go get a third. But you know, but they gave Beathard a you know, a decent amount of money, so you know, I think it'll be a dilemma for them as they piece together the final 53. But I think the roster is pretty good. I think they're going to have some tough cuts in terms of having to say goodbye to some, you know, fairly promising young players because they've just brought in so many over these last two off seasons. So if it were me, I'd keep two quarterbacks. I'd keep Trevor and Minshew. And if you do end up trading Minshew, then I would just keep two. I'd keep Trevor and I'd keep Luton over Beathard, but I don't think they'll do that.
What kind of improvement in your mind is fair to expect from the defense this year after how badly it played throughout all of the 2020 season?
I think if they could finish somewhere between 16 and 19 in the league and in the, you know, the most substantial categories statistically, I think that would be a fantastic jump. You know, I think when you look at how bad they were last year, you know, that would be a pretty rapid rise. They'd still be a below average unit, but that's a lot better than atrocious, which is what they were last year. And you know, I everything's going to have to go right. I mean, they're going to have very little attrition. You know, they're going to have to lead, you know, be close to the lead league and, you know, fewest games missed by their starters. But I like the pieces. I like what they've done. And I think every level has, you know, something that, you know, should frighten the opponent. I'd like there to be a little bit more pass rush. You know, I would welcome them going and signing an edge veteran that's still out there that could possibly, you know, give Chase on some help. But I, you know, I think the secondary's got the potential to be really good. And I like the linebackers and you know, and you've got Josh Allen and, you know, some intriguing pieces up front. I think Robertson Harris is going to, you know, have a immediate major impact in a positive way. So I do think there's good pieces. And then a lot of it is just how quickly can they master what Joe Cullen wants to do. And he's a really strong coach. So I think he communicates really well. So I don't anticipate, you know, this being a unit that needs three or four games before they, you know, really have a 100% hold on what he wants. So, but that will be a challenge since obviously it's a new staff.
Who is the player to watch in your mind for this Jaguars defense heading into the year?
I think the biggest crossroads player is C.J. Henderson, because if he becomes a star, and that's where he was drafted, and then he has had a game where he looked like a star in this league. Yeah, I get it was just one, but he did have it. Then it changes the entire defense. I mean, if C.J. Henderson can become a number one corner, and you have Shaq Griffin, I think Rayshon Jenkins was a very, very savvy signing. Then I think in the secondary it's starting to come together. You know, we'll have to see what Tyson Campbell can give him as a rookie, but obviously athletically he's superb. So I think it's C.J. Henderson, because I think that could go either way. I mean, I think C.J. Henderson could also be a massive disappointment. And so I just think it's really hard to predict what this team is going to get out of C.J. Henderson. But the potential, like his ceiling is so much higher than I think everybody else on that defense. And so if in terms of what we've seen and what could be. So to me, it a lot of it comes down to C.J. Henderson.
Hayes Carline joining us here on Jaguars Today. Hayes, would you be more in favor of the Jaguars adding a pass rusher, whether that be via trade or the free agents that are still available, including Justin Houston, or trading for a tight end between now and the beginning of the season?
Yeah, that's a great question. I still would love to see a tight end, just because, again, to me it's all about Trevor, and I just think you need a veteran tight end that really has done something in the league. Like a Zach Ertz, that can communicate with Trevor Lawrence, talk to him at a level that I think is going to help Trevor's growth and development, you know, not just in game, but during the week in preparation. And, you know, we'll see. I you see the reports about the Eagles are maintaining that, you know, they really want a third, you know, round pick for Zach Ertz, and maybe they'll just hold on to him. And, you know, maybe that's what ends up happening. But if I could get Zach Ertz, you know, for a fourth, fifth round pick, if the Eagles are willing to come, you know, down on what they want, I'd really like to make that move. And I understand people, you know, are saying that, well, they don't, you know, this scheme doesn't really use the tight end. I don't know that that's a good thing. I mean, why would you not use the tight end? So I'd like to, if I could have either, I'd rather give up like the fourth, fifth rounder for Zach Ertz. I probably wouldn't give up a third. I get the risk involved with his injury history. But, you know, if it was a fourth, fifth rounder, I would absolutely do that for Zach Ertz. And, again, they could do both, because they can just sign the edge rusher. That requires nothing. I mean, they have the cap space. They have an owner that's willing to spend. That just comes down to making the deal. So, I get your question either or, but if I'm Shad Khan, I mean, I'm saying, why can't we do both of these things? And they should do both of them. They should get some edge help, and they should make this trade for the tight end, because I refuse to believe that this is some 5-12 operation and that they have no chance to compete for the tournament in year one. If Trevor Lawrence is what they believe he is and what we all believe he is, then they have a chance to get into this tournament this year. And if you can add a couple pieces now to help you do that, why wouldn't you do it?
Less than a week away from the Jaguars taking the field for training camp now, Hayes, beyond Trevor Lawrence, who we know is going to be the top story, what are the biggest stories for you heading into training camp next week?
I think it's going to be fascinating on a lot of different levels. I think the offensive skill is going to be really exciting to see. What is the breakdown? What are we seeing James Robinson do versus Travis Etienne? What are we seeing in terms of Trevor's comfort level with the receivers? Who does he go to? You know, how is that, you know, shaking out in terms of, you know, Chark and Chenault and Jones? And I think that's really exciting. So the skill guys, I think, are going to be a lot of fun. The left tackle will probably be the best battle of camp in terms of high profile, because you have a franchise tag player in Cam Robinson going against the second round pick in Walker Little. So that's probably going to be the highest profile battle in terms of two guys that have significant resources invested in them. And then I think defensively, it's just the growth of the young players and seeing, you know, what Joe Cullen really wants to do, getting a sense of what this is going to look like. And there are storylines galore. I'm leaving out a bunch, but I cannot wait. It's almost like you can't look to a bad place on the field now. I mean, no matter where you're looking, you're looking at something that's going to be incredibly exciting and incredibly fascinating.
Hayes, appreciate it. We'll be listening this afternoon on the Frangie Show as everybody back in town and together today for you guys, and obviously looking for your coverage of training camp starting this week too.
Thanks so much, Tony. Really appreciate your time.
All right. That's Hayes Carlion. You can hear him on the Frangie Show weekday afternoons here on 1010XL. And obviously he covers the Jaguars for us here at 1010XL as well. When we return, we'll take a look around the AFC South, starting with Derek Schultz to talk about the Indianapolis Colts, as well as stopping the other two cities as well. Less than a week away from training camp opening up for everybody. As we continue along, it's a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
All Jags, all NFL. Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Tony Smith here with you as we are less than a week away from training camps opening across the National Football League, with the 30 teams that aren't playing in the Hall of Fame game starting their training camps next week. So let's take a look around the AFC South right now. We'll start up in Indianapolis with Derek Schultz, who is the host of the Schultz Star Show podcast, as well as the host of Query and Schultz on ISC Sports Network. Derek, appreciate you giving us a few minutes this morning.
Yeah, a long time. Thanks for having me.
Will we see a player that more closely resembles the 2019 or the 2020 version of quarterback Carson Wentz this year?
Oh, God, the million-dollar question. Will we get the 2017 version of Carson Wentz? I guess you could throw that into the equation as well. You know, I wish I had an answer for you, Tom, because I really don't know. I don't think anybody knows. Frank Reich and Chris Ballard are certainly confident that they're going to get the 2017-18-19-esque version of Carson Wentz, much more so than the disastrous last year version of him. But, you know, new system, new scheme, yes, familiarity with Reich and all of that, but certainly much different personnel than what he had last year with that injury-riddled Eagles offensive line and some of the wide receiver availability issues that they had. So really, that is the biggest question for the Colts. I hate to make it about just one guy and one thing, but when you look at the outlook for the 2021 Colts, so much of it comes down to what Carson Wentz they're getting this year.
When can we expect to see a done deal with linebacker Darius Leonard after the Fred Warner deal got done yesterday?
I don't think they're really that worried about getting. I think they'd like to get it done before camp, which is we're less than a week away now from players reporting Monday, and then Tuesday is the first practice. But I do think that it will happen before the season starts, and I think it's likely that it happens, in fact, before the first preseason game in August. This is a deal that both sides want to make happen, and given the numbers and everything like that, I don't think it's going to be that big of an issue. So I would assume that you're going to hear something concrete probably in the next 7 to 10 days.
So for the Colts heading into 2021, Derek, what is the bar for a successful season for Indianapolis?
I think you have to, well, first off, you got to get back to the playoffs. That's the very least. Anything less than that is a failure, because that's at least what they did last year with an older, you know, in the twilight of his career, Phillip Rivers, albeit he did play well. But I think it's winning a playoff game, because as much as fans here feel very confident about Chris Ballard's leadership and also about Frank Reich, and I know that Ballard came in a year before Reich, those two combined have only combined for one playoff win, and that was in 2018 with Andrew Luck. So I think they need to at least take that step forward. But the expectation here is to kind of get things back rolling again when it comes to the division, because you guys know this, for many years in the AFC South, it was a foregone conclusion that, okay, the Colts are going to win the division. Who's going to come in second? And that's what it was from 2000 and from the inception and into about 2014. And now you look at the last couple of years, this team hasn't won a division championship since 2014. It's been a long time coming. So I think really that's the first step. Before we talk about playoffs and making the AFC championship game or anything like that, I think the Colts really just need to get on the right side of the ledger again when it comes to the AFC South, because they've been kicked off that throne now for the last 6-7 years.
Derek, appreciate the time. I'm sure we'll talk to you again sometime between now and the start of the season, but appreciate it.
Looking forward to it, my man. Thanks.
All right, that's Derek Schultz, host of Query and Schultz on ISC Sports Network, covering the Indianapolis Colts. Let's take a look now up in Nashville with the reigning division champion Tennessee Titans, checking in with Jim Wyatt of TitansOnline.com to discuss Tennessee. Jim, appreciate you giving us a few minutes here.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Are the Titans better on offense this year than they were last season, having added Julio Jones despite what they lost?
I think it should be. I mean, obviously lose Corey Davis, lose Johnny Smith, two guys who got really nice deals elsewhere, and you lose your offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith, to the Falcons, where he's taking over as head coach. That's a lot of guys leaving. But you're getting Julio Jones, as you mentioned. You're getting A.J. Brown, who has another year under his belt. You're getting an offensive line that's going to get Taylor Lewan back, and they played a good part of the season without him last year. And you've got a guy that stopped stepping into the offensive coordinator position, Todd Downing, who obviously has been with the system. I don't think he's going to make too dramatic of changes. And I think this team will be in a position to be really good. It may take some time. You know, they scored over 30 points in 11 games last year, second in the league in offense. May not look, you know, perfect at the beginning, but I think in time, this offense will get its groove and will be just as good, if not better.
Has the defense improved enough to make them a championship contender in your mind?
Well, that remains to be seen. I mean, a lot of these guys that they've signed this offseason are drafted, Bud Dupree, Caleb Farley. These guys have not taken the field yet in camp. Bud coming off a knee, Farley the first-round pick, dealing with a back injury. Expect to see him at some time in camp. They've made a lot of changes. Danico Autry, you know, former Colt, is supposed to make a big difference on this defense as well. They're going to have some new faces. They parted ways with Kenny Vaccaro and Adoree Jackson and Malcolm Butler. Those are three veteran guys in the secondary. I think there's potential for this defense to be better, but that's another group that's going to have to gel, and they're going to have to kind of learn each other on the fly as we go through camp and guys kind of get incorporated back into the mix. Should be better, hard to be honest with you. A lot of fans here probably say it'd be tough to be worse just because of some of the struggles last year. But definitely have more talent, and should be able to get off the quarterback. Should be able to get after the quarterback better than they did last year.
Defending division champs up there in Nashville, what is the bar for a successful season for the Titans in 2021?
Well, I mean, I think you just want to give yourself a chance to get back in the postseason, you know, win the division again. You know, this team is just a couple of years removed from playing the AFC Championship game, won the division last year. Of course, everyone wants to get back in the Super Bowl. Titans haven't been in there since 1999, an inaugural season as the Titans. But, you know, everybody wants to win the Super Bowl. I think this team is in a window where it has a chance to make a run at a title. You don't go out and trade for a guy like Julio Jones unless you think you're close. So, but the first step is to win the division and give yourself a chance to host a playoff game, and then go from there. This team put itself in that spot last year and then lost the first round of the Ravens. You want to erase that and then try to pick up momentum like this team did in 2019 and have a chance to get to LA.
How long do you think that championship window is open for the Titans?
It's hard to say. Still got some good young talent, but obviously Derrick Henry led the league in rushing the past 2 years, coming off a 2,000-yard season. We've all seen, you know, running backs, have windows where they're very successful, and then it stops. You know, he's shown no signs of slowing down, but I think you got to be realistic about this. He can't do it forever at the way he's doing it. So I think this team will ride him as long as they can. They've got several other young, talented players who are going to be around here for a while. But, window doesn't stay open with these current players forever, and that's why this team kind of built to win now and needs to take advantage of the opportunity.
Jim, appreciate it. Always do. You've been a friend of the program for years, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again here soon. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Jim Wyatt of TitansOnline.com joining us to talk about Tennessee. One more stop to make in the AFC South. Let's head out to Houston and talk to John Harris, the sideline reporter for the Houston Texans. Thanks for giving us a few minutes today, John. And you know where we're going to start. And I don't even know like which direction to even address this question from. So I'll just say it this way. Who is playing quarterback for the Houston Texans this year?
Oh, man. I was prepared for this question, and then when you hear it, you're like, I don't know. I really don't. I mean, there's kind of this going on right now. There's kind of a Deshaun Watts. Like, is he going to show up at training camp next week? I mean, our local radio stations are, I mean, it's like Flashpoint Bulletin. Deshaun's got 5 days to report. Like, it's crazy. My gut tells me it's Tyrod Taylor with the Davis Mills chaser, but I don't know. We are in such an interesting position compared to where we were, and I listened to the last two guys talk, Jim and Derek, and they were great. And I'm like so envious to listen to them go, because that was us for a decent period of time. That was us talking about division titles and talking about what you know how we were gonna look with Deshaun and what this team had with J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, and DeAndre Hopkins, and we don't have any of that now. And so we've essentially reset. I think the Deshaun off the field stuff sort of slowed down a youth movement reset that I thought was going to happen, but we just you couldn't trade Deshaun because everything is going on. You can't trade him now until everything's settled. So everybody's just kind of in a holding pattern, and that's the worst place to be is in a holding pattern because it feels like being mediocre. Like if you're bad, you could just reset it and go young, you know, like the Jaguars have done. And I feel like the Jaguars have had some talent. They just never put it all together. But now they've gone young, starting with Trevor Lawrence and some young pieces around him. Boy, there's excitement around that. Or you go all in like the Tennessee Titans did. Hey, we're going to trade for Julio Jones. And that gets exciting. If you're stuck in the middle or you're mediocre or you kind of don't know where you are because of things going on, it's the worst place to be in the NFL or any organization at that point.
John, how would you assess the job that David Culley has done as a first-time head coach this offseason?
I think he's done well with what he's had to work with. I think he's the right piece for the Texans at this point. Coming off of 7 years of Bill O'Brien, there were a lot of people in the city, in the building, Texans fans who were just sort of beat down by the whole thing. David Culley comes in, he is a B12 shot. I mean, Rafael Palmeiro would love this guy because he could take B12 shots all day long. Because he's just constant energy and he's constant positivity. And he's got an opportunity at the age of 65 to be head coach, and I love that for him. I don't know. None of us have really any idea how he will be as a game manager, handling egos, all that kind of stuff. But it just feels like his positive vibe has really made a difference in the building. We've felt it. Every single day we felt it being in here. So it's going to be interesting to see how he teams with Nick Caserio going forward. But for right now, this team needed a positive influence at that head coaching position, and David Culley has given them that for sure.
And not to bring you down again, but we'll close with this. The same question I asked the Jim White and Derek Schultz as well. What is the bar for a successful season in Houston?
Come on. I knew it was coming. The thing is, in so many years, that bar has been so high. Hey, man, we're playing for AFC Championship. The city of Houston haven't been in an AFC Championship game since January of 1980. And that was the Oilers, and they're now the Titans. So that was always the bar. I think the bar this year is to be able to find players that can be long-term fits. Well, NFL speaking, long-term fits going forward. Who are those guys? Because there are going to be some drafts, depending on what happens with Deshaun and a trade, potential trade and all that kind of stuff, that you're going to bring an infusion of youth coming in. But which guys stick around to help set a good culture going forward that you can get back to where you were? So I think the bar, look, I think Vegas put it at 4.5. I think his team is better than people think. But then again, you don't. It's not going to be a sexy season in any way, shape, or form. So whatever they do, if they go out there and compete and just kind of show some grit and some toughness, I think the people in Houston will get behind it. It'll take them a little while to kind of get over everything. But I think once they see some toughness and positivity, I think the fans might get behind it. It just isn't going to be that season that the Titans, the Colts, the Jags seemingly are going to have. So, like, they get the 5-6 wins. I think that's going to be a good start of the Culley Caserio era.
All right, John, appreciate it, bud, as always. Joining us, and again, we'll probably chat with you again between now and the beginning of the season. Thank you so much.
You got it. Go Fiscal Eagles. Yeah.
John Harris, sideline reporter for the Houston Texans, joining us to talk a little bit. So that's your check around the AFC South as we are less than a week away from everybody starting their training camps and not a whole lot unexpected in there. It sounds like the Titans expect to be competing for the division title. Indianapolis doesn't sound like they know whether or not they're competing for the division title because Derek Schultz, at least talking about it, isn't really sure what they're going to be able to get out of Carson Wentz at this point. And Houston is hopeful they can win more than 4. when everything is said and done, and that it would be overachieving for the 2021 Houston Texans. We have this state in football history, gems around the NFL on the other side as we continue along here on a Thursday edition. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history for July 22nd through the years. Believe it or not, not a whole heck of a lot happened on this day in football history. We do have quite a few birthdays to run through here. We'll start with the only Hall of Famer in the group. Happy 55th birthday to Hall of Fame wide receiver Tim Brown. Brown spent 16 of his 17 years in the league with the L.A. and Oakland Raiders, then played 1 year with who, E? His last year in the league, he played where?
College Notre Dame.
Uh-huh.
Most of his pro career with the Raiders.
Yep.
And he finished off, I don't remember.
1 year with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got that.
Brown was selected as a Pro Bowler 9 times and was chosen as a second-team member of the All-Decade Team of the 90s by the Pro Football Hall of Fame as well. Happy 38th birthday to 3-time Pro Bowl running back Steven Jackson. Jackson, a name that we talk about quite a bit.
Monster.
Here on the show, Jackson had 8 consecutive 1,000-yard seasons from 2005 to 2012. He is 18th on the all-time rushing yards list, and this is why his name comes up a bunch, because he is one spot behind Fred Taylor. Every retired running back ahead of these two men that are on that list are in the Hall of Fame. Frank Gore, who is 3rd overall on the all-time rushing list, and Adrian Peterson, who is 5th overall on the all-time rushing list, the only two active players ahead of those two. Everyone else that is retired is in the Hall of Fame. Like, of the retired guys at running back, the next on the list is Fred Taylor. So we'll see if he can get himself more in that kind of conversation here soon. Happy 26th birthday to Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott. Zeke led the league in rushing in 2 of his first 3 seasons and led the league in rushing yards per game in his second season, but served a 6-game suspension to begin the 2017 year. Elliott has made 3 Pro Bowls in his first 5 seasons and was selected as a first-team All-Pro after his rookie year. He's already going into year 6. It feels like he just started, but he's already going into year number 6 for Zeke out there in Dallas. I will not say happy birthday, given how the Jaguars fan base feels about this guy, but I will note that it's Tennessee Titans left tackle Taylor Lewan's 30th birthday today. Lewan made 3 straight Pro Bowls from 2016 to 2018, but has missed 15 games over the last 2 seasons due to injuries, and one cannot forget also a suspension for PED use to start the year in 2019. Happy 29th birthday to former Jacksonville Jaguars offensive lineman Chris Reed. Reed, an undrafted free agent signing by the Jags, spent 3 seasons here in Jacksonville, appearing in 25 games. He started 14 games for Carolina last year, signed with Indianapolis in free agency this offseason. And happy 23rd birthday to current Jaguars guard Ben Bartsch. Bartsch is going into his second season in the league after being drafted by the Jaguars in the 4th round of the draft last year. We'll see if he can compete for some playing time at some point in the near future. We know, as we've talked about, both guards going to be free agents after the upcoming season, so maybe some playing time in the near future for Ben Bartsch, and that is this date in football history.
Now, gems around the NFL, brought to you by Beaches Jewelry and Pawn in Jack's Beach.
A couple of notes here. The San Francisco 49ers have agreed to terms on a 5-year contract extension with linebacker Fred Warner. That will make him the highest-paid off-ball linebacker in NFL history. The deal is reportedly 5 years and $95 million, with $40.5 million guaranteed. The 26-year-old Warner has 367 tackles in his first 3 years and was selected as a first-team All-Pro after the 2020 season. Adam Schefter reported yesterday afternoon that the Indianapolis Colts and linebacker Darius Leonard are close to working out a 4-year contract extension that is expected to be worth more than $19 million a year, which would make him the highest paid off-ball linebacker potentially in league history the day after Warner got that deal done. So we'll see where Leonard finally lands, but could land north of where Fred Warner did. Leonard has made 2 Pro Bowls and been selected as a first-team All-Pro 2 times in his first 3 years in the National Football League.
That's a bad boy.
He's a monster, is what Darius Leonard is. And rookies and veterans for the Pittsburgh Steelers and Dallas Cowboys reported for training camp yesterday. Those two teams square off for the Hall of Fame game this year on August 5th at 8 p.m. All 30 other teams have a veterans report date of July 27th. That's next Tuesday, including the Jacksonville Jaguars. And as we mentioned, the Jaguars released their preseason or their training camp schedule and what practices will be open to the public yesterday as well. The Jaguars begin training camp next Wednesday, so 6 days from now. The first practice open to the public will be 1 week from today, next Thursday, July 29th. Practice will also be open to the public on Friday and Saturday next weekend. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, open to the public next week at Jaguars training camp. They'll be off on Sunday, back on the field on Monday, August 2nd, with three practices on the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, with no fans in attendance, though they do put on the pads officially the middle of the week, that second week of training camp. And then the first padded practice that fans can see will be Friday, August 6th. They'll be back on the field on Saturday, August 7th in pads as well. And then the scrimmage at TIAA Bank Field, but presented by Florida Blue, on Sunday, August 8th. And obviously the pads will be on for that. And as I said early on in the show, that will likely be the first opportunity. It will be the first opportunity to see Trevor Lawrence on the field. In a Jaguars uniform on the field that he'll be playing on for a while in a Jaguars uniform. You can check him out at practice before that, obviously, but so many fans that just haven't had a chance to get out and see him at all. And I always flash back to when they drafted Blake Bortles and people lining up outside the fence because they limited the attendance for that rookie minicamp. But they let some people in, but people were standing outside the fence to watch because they had drafted a future quarterback. I don't know how many people deep it would have gone this year if those things would have had any chance for anyone to catch even a glimpse of Trevor practicing. And all you got to do is wait a week, and you can go see it for yourself.
I will say that I've never owned a Jaguars jersey.
Oh?
I'm getting me a jersey this year. I'm getting a jersey. I'm just not sure which one I'm going to go with.
Oh, what are your options here?
Of course, the big 1-6.
Uh-huh.
But I'm leaning, I might go a custom E to the T jersey or a Travis Etienne jersey.
Okay.
Well, it's going to be one of those three. But for sure, getting a jersey this year.
Are you going to leave it up to the people, or are you doing this like this is an independent decision?
You know, I'm a man of the people. I'm always open to opinions. You know, I got an open door policy. So, you know, I'm always open to the opinions.
I was about to say, throw a poll up, man. They'll let you know.
Which jersey I should get.
Yeah. Man. They'll let you know. I got a feeling that 16 is not going out of style in Jacksonville anytime
right?
soon. We hear from fans all the time that are like, these are all the jerseys of the guys who left me before a second contract. Like, we get the list of those guys, right? Like, how excited we were about X, Y, right. and Z, and they're not here. They didn't even make it to another deal.
There's longevity behind that 16 jersey.
I think 16's sticking around.
That'll be the best one, probably.
Yeah, I got a feeling that one's not going anywhere for a while. And that if it doesn't last more than, I'd say, at least 5 years in Jacksonville for Trevor Lawrence, that here in about 5 years, we're going to have an offseason of real frustration from fans if that doesn't turn out the way that we all think it potentially could for Trevor here in Jacksonville. I saw ESPN put up an article ranking the NFL's second-year breakout candidates, and they listed 15 players that, as they said, it could become stars, right? So second-year guys that were drafted or brought in last year that could have a big breakout year this year. So at the top of the list, they have Joe Burrow. Fine, I get it. Suffered the injury. Cool, fine. Jerry Jeudy, wide receiver for Denver at number 2, all right? Ezra Cleveland, guard for Minnesota. They're number 3. That's one player that wasn't a first-round pick.
Strike one.
To this point. So that's in the 2020 draft. He was drafted at number 58 overall. Josh Uche, an edge player for the New England Patriots. He was picked late in the second round last year. Jordan Brooks, linebacker for Seattle, first-round pick. Cameron Curl, safety for Washington, was a fifth-round pick, I believe. by Washington, but they have him in there. Number seven, they have Jedrick Wills, 10th overall to Cleveland. They have Kevin Dotson, a guard for Pittsburgh, at number 135 in the draft last year. They have Henry Ruggs, wide receiver in Vegas. He was a first-round pick. Adam Trautman, tight end in New Orleans. He was a third or fourth-round pick there. Andrew Thomas, an offensive tackle for the Giants. He was a first-round pick, number four overall, and apparently played better in the back half of last season, but did not start so hot up there. And then that was a guy we were talking about a lot with the Jags at number nine, where they wound up getting C.J. Henderson. Now, he wasn't available to him. He went fourth, so it's not like they didn't get him. Justin Matabuke with on the defensive interior for the Baltimore Ravens was a third-round pick. A.J. Epinesa was a second-round pick of the Buffalo Bills. Jeff Okuda, the cornerback for the Lions at number three overall. If he's a breakout candidate, I don't know why C.J. Henderson isn't, right? But whatever. They both had similar kind of seasons where there was largely disappointment for the way that the top two corners in last year's draft wound up playing. Damian Lewis, the guard for Seattle. They had two guys on the list. They got two of the 15. Okay. He was drafted in the third round of the draft. So eight of the 15, all right, were guys that were not taken in the first round. Cool. I'm fine with that, right? Like that doesn't bother me all that much. I do wonder, though, in my own mind, when I saw the list, you got Jerry Jeudy in there, right? I do wonder, we've talked so much about Laviska Shenault this offseason, right? And whether or not he is the breakout candidate for the Jaguars this year. Had a pretty solid rookie year. He had about the same number of catches as Jeudy. Jeudy was a more explosive guy from a yardage standpoint, had about 200 more yards than Laviska Shenault last year. I do wonder if Laviska had been taken 20 instead of in the second round, if what he had done in his rookie year would have gotten more attention on a list like this. We'll never know the answer to that kind of question, but I do wonder, and I'm, you know, they had 12 draft picks last year. We don't have one, right? We don't have one that they're looking at as a potential breakout candidate going into year number two. And it's not like any of them were stars last year for the team. Not great. Anything that happened for Jacksonville in 2020. And that just continues and continues and continues to pile up when everything is said and done. We'll get into the question of the day today, asking you, who is the most important member of the Jaguars secondary for the 2021 season? Your options: Shaq Griffin at corner, C.J. Henderson at corner. I included Rayshon Jenkins at safety in there, as well as other, if you want to respond with somebody else in that defensive backfield, feel free. We'll get some of your answers to that, as well as CBS has put up their AFC South training camp preview. So what three questions did they pick for the Jacksonville Jaguars heading into next week's training camp? We'll get to those and our answers to what those questions might be when we wrap it up on the other side here on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Hey, good morning, guys. Let me get this off my chest first. Do you feel that same, you know, optimism and opinion about the Jags as just a regular year, and I'm just all fired up myself?
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Ah, Byron's excited. Jacksonville, you ought to be excited, man. We're less than a week away from training camp opening up. We're a week away from the public being able to get out there and see these guys for the first time. And I got a feeling we may be getting some kind of update here on some events for next week with training camp open to the public. But I'll let him speak for himself. Hopefully we are, as we welcome in Fan Cam at 641-1010. Do we have an update on the annual chili cook-off, Fan Cam?
Yes, we do. Announced after... Oh, thank you. He announced after your show ended yesterday the opening of training camp for fans a week from today. So I'll be presenting about 45 quarts of 13 sausage chili, for all comers, and I look forward to serving you a bowl yourself, Fat Tony.
Absolutely. When do you start on this process of 13 quarts of chili?
Well, hopefully it's about 45 quarts, and works out to about 200 to 250 bowls. Boy, you remember in 18, after that 2017 season, the line around the stadium for the opening day of training camp, yeah, about an hour before they started, it was all the way around the stadium. I think it might be down to the river this year.
Oh, and realistic, like, it's going to be nuts, man. Opportunity to go see these guys.
It should be crazy. I'll be starting 2 days early. You got to get chili in the freezer and bring the temperature down. Then you bring it back up for the next day to serve it, and the flavor should be locked in. And I'm sure E.T. is going to be forced to stay in the dungeon.
I'm going to get out there somehow, some way. I'm going to show face.
Well, I'll have a care package for you if you don't, and I'm excited. So we'll see you guys a week from today, and it's going to be fun watching these guys on the field.
Absolutely. Fan Cam, appreciate it. We look forward to it next week, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
As Fan Cam, the annual chili cook-off is back in a full effect next week at the opening, or the day that it opens up to the public. So next Thursday, if you're heading out for training camp, leave a little room in the belly. Leave some breakfast room.
I'm laughing because I thought his name was Cameron.
Yes, you did. You really did. You really did. Nope, nope. That's just a nickname. He was the guy who wore the camera on his head for the early years of the Jaguars. As I mentioned early on in the show, CBS has their article up talking about the biggest questions for each team in each division heading into training camp. They got the AFC South that they put up today, so that obviously includes your Jacksonville Jaguars. So three questions about the Jacksonville Jaguars heading into training camp. Number one is no big surprise. How good will Trevor Lawrence be in year one for the Jaguars? We've had discussion after discussion about just what to expect out of Trevor in year number one. We've compared him to guys like Justin Herbert, who had one of the biggest rookie years in NFL history last year. So, yeah, that is the question, right, is just how good will Trevor Lawrence be and how early? We asked a question of the day earlier this week. Trevor Lawrence will be a top blank quarterback heading into next season. And we had some people that were just like, take out the just replace the A with the top quarterback, and I think you got it. And I can't tell if they're serious that they think Trevor Lawrence will be the number one quarterback in the league heading into next year, but you get the enthusiasm. So how quickly do we see it with Trevor Lawrence is a big question heading into this year. I expect it'll be pretty early. I keep pointing out every time we have this conversation, obviously there's going to be growing pains. They happen for rookie quarterbacks, but as was mentioned earlier this week on the show, I hope that we're not going into next offseason going, well, you know, Peyton Manning threw 28 interceptions as a rookie, guys. You know, like, we don't have to worry about the blank number of interceptions that Trevor Lawrence threw because Peyton threw 28. I don't know if you've ever heard that, E, that Peyton Manning threw 28 interceptions as a rookie. It feels like
right. That
is a really obscure stat that everyone quotes all the time when they're talking about rookie quarterbacks in the league. But that is question number one there on CBS Sports. How good will Trevor Lawrence be in year one? Number two, well, if you're going to ask a question about Trevor Lawrence, who are they asking about next? Urban Meyer, of course. So, question number two, can Urban Meyer's style transition to the National Football League? As he writes here, Meyer's already experienced some bumps in the road as an NFL coach, hasn't coached a game yet. He mentions the hiring of Chris Doyle. Says that Meyer has also been frustrated by contact limitations and the need to spend more time with the players, a major difference between the NFL and college. Fined for violating the no-contact rule for off-season practices and minicamp, drafting ETN and lining him up a wide receiver is questionable. The signing of Tim Tebow, who never played tight end in the NFL, has been out of football since 2015, made some scratch their heads as well. If Meyer loses a few games, will he be able to handle it and control his locker room? At the end of the day, Meyer can eliminate all those issues by developing a young Jaguars team and winning games in year one. The fate of the Jaguars franchise is in Meyer's hands. He gets at least 2 years to see if his style works. This Jaguars team is good enough to win at least six games this year. I put the number at 7-6. Okay. It's a difference, but it's not that big of a difference. And yeah, he just went down the laundry list of all the things that people have been poking Urban Meyer for. Some of them I think is legit. Like the Doyle thing is legit. It happened. The reaction to it was immediate when the public really got hold of that story. And he's not here. He never interacted with a player. Not one player on the roster here in Jacksonville. But until Urban Meyer goes out and wins 9 or 10 football games, all this stuff is going to be mentioned over and over and over again. And I feel like I'm in the same kind of position that Dempsey talks about being in. They've made me a defender of Urban Meyer. Like when they hired Urban, Mike and I both expressed that it's not the direction that we would have necessarily gone. We're on board. He's the Jaguars coach. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I want him to fail. I want him to succeed at the highest possible level during his time in Jacksonville, because if he succeeds, Jacksonville succeeds at the highest possible level. So yeah, I'm hoping and wishing success for Urban Meyer, and I'm also reacting to things that happen as they happen. When they hired Doyle, we came in the day after that going, what on earth are they thinking? And basically by the time that we were off the air that night, they were like, we're not bringing in Chris Doyle. It's like, okay. They reacted quickly to that one. We've talked through the Tim Tebow thing, and everyone keeps making a bigger deal out of it than I think it actually is as far as what he's going to be or what he's going to be asked to do. But again, that'll play out over the course of training camp starting next week when the pads come on. Can he play tight end? I don't know what the answer to that is, but he's the last man on the roster. Is there a last man on any other NFL roster? I get it. It's Tebow.
That's it, man.
It's not going away. We're not going to get it to go away. It's just not happening anytime soon. And the third question they asked, all right, they've asked about Trevor. Uh-huh. They've asked about Urban.
Mm-hmm.
So where do they go for number three? They go, is James Robinson still the top option at running back? Here's what they had to say about it. This was a question that didn't need to be asked. Yet Meyer drafted Etienne in the first round, despite the spectacular rookie season Robinson had. I don't know how we can convince anyone what the Etienne pick was. Everyone is so dug in on this Etienne thing that I don't know that we can ever show them. He told you after they drafted Etienne that they really wanted Kadarius Toney. Why?
No, you didn't.
Why? Why did he want Toney? Because Toney can do anything they ask him to do. He can line up all over the field. He can play running back for you if you need him to in some of those packages. He's obviously a wide receiver. He can play in the slot. He can play outside. He can do all those things. It was the versatility. Why do you think they pivoted to Travis Etienne? You think it maybe had something to do with his versatility and the different things that they could do with him coming into an offense that severely lacked playmaking? And yet they continue to go to this. What is Travis Etienne? He's told you over and over what Travis Etienne is. I don't know when they're going to hear it. At this point, I don't know when they're going to hear it between now and the actual start of the season. But that is the three questions they had for the Jaguars heading into training camp. With that, let's get to our poll question of the day and today's 10-10 take.
10-10. This 10-10 take is brought to you by Baptist MD Anderson Cancer Center. You're cared for by a team of experts working together on a treatment plan that's just for you.
The question of the day asking you who is the most important player in the Jaguars secondary for the 2021 season. Your options in the poll: Shaq Griffin, CJ Henderson, Rayshon Jenkins, or other. And you could reply with your answer. Not surprisingly, like I said, I messed it up. I should have just had the two.
You had one job, Tony.
And include other as the third option on the poll. But it is really, really tight between the top two. So I'll ask you, E.T., who is the most important player in the Jaguars secondary for the 2021 season?
Man, I got to agree with what I think Prosser said earlier on the crosstalk. It got to be Shaq Griffin because of the money that you gave him. On top of what he brings as far as his knowledge and the veteran, he's the guy to go to back there. Usually it's the free safety is like the captain of, you know, of the secondary. Mm-hmm. But I got to say, of this secondary, it got to be Shaq Griffin because of the money and what he brings to the secondary as far as his knowledge of the game.
Shaq Griffin is getting 46.2% of the vote to the 45.8% of the vote that C.J. Henderson is getting.
Mm.
It is pretty much a split between those two guys with over 250 votes in this morning. Rayshon Jenkins got 7.1%, 0.8% going with other. So you're getting around 8% not going to those two guys. And I think it depends on how you want to approach the question, right? I think it is vitally important for the Jaguars to hit on top 10 picks. And I don't know, my expectations for C.J. Henderson have been pretty low, as we've discussed over and over here on the show. If I had to pick one or the other, I'd pick Shaq Griffin for all the reasons that we've laid out already on the show this morning. That's where I would ultimately land with how I'd answer the question. But I get why it's a 50-50 split between the two guys as to who's the most important guy back there. And when you talk about the secondary overall, just the overlook for it coming into the season, there's so much new and there's so much unknown. We had a couple people that answered with Andre Sisko being the most important because of his playmaking ability, right? And that's what he did during his time at Syracuse was he was around the ball all the time, it felt like. He was just a ball hawk playmaking safety, which they need some of that, obviously, here in Jacksonville. But split between Shaq and CJ, I'd land on Shaq, although I think my margin would be about that margin. It's now even. 46.1, 46.1 between the two of them in the poll as we get set to welcome in the boys of XL Primetime. Do want to let you know that the Hometown Hero cast with Mike Hollis now available as of 9 o'clock this morning on all your podcasting outlets out there as we welcome in XL Primetime.
Now, the two-minute drill brought to you by Tire Outlet. Keeping the rubber on the road with wholesale prices and premium service. Tire Outlet, Jacksonville's largest locally owned automotive repair shop.
Break the tie for his hack as we have 46.1 to 46.1% between C.J. Henderson and Shaq Griffin, who is the most important player for the 2021 Jaguars secondary.
Well, it better be Shaq Griffin with what they're paying him. I mean, they're paying him some big money, so I'll go Shaq Griffin, but I like the secondary spot. You know, what they had compared to what they have now over the last 12 months, Tyson Campbell, Shaq Griffin. You know, people forget Trey Herndon and Sidney Jones. I don't mind them as players. I thought they showed glimpses of something, and they're now your 4 and 5 cornerbacks. I mean, I think, you know, Tony, I don't know what your thoughts are, but every position on the team, 1 to 5, cornerback may be the strongest of them all.
Corner's pretty strong, but it depends on how you feel about C.J. Henderson.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
It depends on how you feel about him in general. What is Tyson Campbell going to be as a second round pick? And you know, if both those guys were to not work out, that'd be a different conversation to be had,
right,
about the entire thing. And I think that's where the C.J. Henderson thing gets interesting, because you mentioned the money that Shaq Griffin's getting. They invested a top 10 pick in C.J. Henderson. That's a lot.
They did, but it was Dave Caldwell.
I know it wasn't technically these guys, but everything they've said about C.J. since they got here is that they love him.
Yes, and then they go out and sign Shaq Griffin and draft Tyson Campbell.
Well, that's because who was playing corner opposite him.
Agreed. I know, I get it. I just think, you know, it's one thing to say all the right things, but I look at actions, and the actions are they used the 33rd pick in the draft, which might as well be a first rounder, on a corner. The biggest money they spent in free agency was at corner. I imagine they do like C.J. Henderson. They didn't like him enough not to really address that in the offseason, though.
And they really needed to.
Agreed. Like, yeah. And Chris Claybrooks. I mean, I know Claybrooks had a couple of issues against the run last year, but for a seventh-round rookie, I thought he showed something at times last year, and I would hate to see them have to cut him. But I don't think they keep 6 DBs.
Yeah, I don't know what you do with the numbers of that spot with Herndon and Sidney Jones being there too. Like, I don't know what the numbers are going to be for any of the other guys on the depth chart at this point. What do you got coming up on primetime?
I mean, obviously a lot of Jaguar talk. Joe is still at ACC Media Days in Charlotte. Florida State is in the house today, so we're going to talk to a lot of ACC coaches. And this Texas-Oklahoma story is absolutely nuts. Matt Hayes, fresh off, I think, a 2 a.m. arrival back in Jacksonville from SEC Media Days. He's back in studio with us. Can't wait to pick his brain, because I don't tend to trust Matt when it comes to the world of college football. It's what he's done for many, many decades. We're lucky to have him here on 1010XL, and he thinks it's going to happen relatively soon that Texas and Oklahoma are going to bolt the Big 12 and head to the SEC.
So would they just add two more teams to replace them, or
I think the Big 12 probably 12? Dissolves at that point.
Ooh,
because, I mean, you can't survive without Texas and Oklahoma. Who's your leading horse there in the Big 12 then, Oklahoma State?
Yeah, maybe the mega conferences really are.
Yeah, maybe the four 16-team conferences are really on the horizon.
We'll see. We'll be listening, Hack.
Thanks, Tony.
XL Primetime coming up next. Hacker, Matt Hayes, Leon Searcy in studio. Joe C. with Rick Ballew up in Charlotte for the ACC kickoff. Want to say thank you to Jim Wyatt, Derek Schultz, and John Harris for coming in and taking a look around the AFC South with me this morning. Hayes Carlion joining us this morning as well. So, for an honest assignment, Mike Dempsey, and the straw that stirs the drink here on Jaguars Today. Emmanuel Thalerin, I'm Tony Smith. Tom McManus joins me for the show tomorrow. Stay tuned for XL Primetime next here on 1010 XL.
Yo, Jacksonville. Start taking care of y'all mantles, y'all bodies, and y'all chicken.